Good afternoon, Rapids, and welcome to WFHR's Playmakers. Welcome to the show, everybody. Seth and James here with you. We hope you're having a fantastic Friday afternoon. Happy Friday.
It is. Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday, Seth.
Woo!
We are going to have some fun today, baby. It's a Friday show.
We're at the end of the week, and we're like trying to get the energy. Yeah, Friday, yeah.
Yeah. But then it hit me. Oh, it's the last hour of the week for
that's
me.
That's true. Hey, that's right.
Sort of. I put in tons of hours off air, but that's
he does.
For the audience.
Neither here nor there right now.
Yes. We're going to have some fun today, everybody. At 5:30, we're going to take a break. We'll come back, and we're going to spend some time, the rest of the show, really, I'd like to. We'll see how it plays out. Oh, talking about Mo Hill.
Yes.
We're going to spend some time celebrating Mo Hill. Looking forward to that. Mo, of course, being celebrated tonight at Witter Field. Mm-hmm. Get to the ballpark if you haven't already got tickets. Get your tickets at northwoodsleague.com. This is going to be one of the more legendary, memorable nights at Witter Field in that team's history, period.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They have never retired a number before, as Seth mentioned last Wednesday.
It's crazy. I did a deep dive, but a medium dive, if you can do such a thing.
Yeah.
Into not only Mo Hill's career here, but also I learned a whole bunch about the Rapids Twins that I did not know. So I'm excited because I learned a whole bunch of stuff that was really cool.
We've got some special guests joining us. We are able to, because our show is so big, we are able to land Pam. We've got Pam joining us.
We're the best guests here on the show.
The best guests we could have.
Yeah, exactly.
We're very excited about that. Pam's going to join us at 5:30. We'll talk with Pam a little bit. She got to see Mo. Carl did. Mm-hmm. She actually went and hunted down a flyer
a season retrospective or a teaser for the year kind of thing.
And
I actually looked through it, the whole thing. It was fun. My gosh, 1978 is when it was for the 1978 cool. season.
So we'll be talking about that. We'll certainly be talking Rafters around that time too, and we're going to be talking a lot of baseball today because the All-Star game is right around the corner
next week.
And not only do I have some stats of the show for you guys that I think are going to be kind of fun, and I do want to get into why baseball managers wear uniforms and no other coaches do.
That's a fascinating topic.
But two places to start today, Seth, and we'll get to, another one I want to get to with you. You brought up watching an old All-Star game this morning.
Oh, yeah.
We're in between segments on the morning show, so I didn't have my full brain, not that I do right now anyway, but I didn't have my full brain, and the game you were talking about really stood out to me, and I couldn't remember why. And there is about 3 years ago, Tim Kirkjian, I think maybe the best mind of baseball.
Yeah, he's a great writer. He's just a very smart dude, yeah.
Overall, there's guys that are so much that know the game and are independently incredibly smart about certain aspects of the game. I think that if you're going to go to a baseball historian and you need somebody to be able to cover the whole sport from the first pitch thrown to this season right now, currently going on, Tim Kirkjian is the greatest of all time. He is the Mickey Mantle of when it comes to this. I'd love him to hear that. Just because Tim Kirkjian, also greatest laugh in baseball.
He
came out with a great article that all your baseball cards came to life the night 50 years ago when 22 Hall of Famers played in an All-Star game for the ages. It's a beautifully written article. It is poetry, and it is also just incredible stats and details about this game that you were referencing.
It was the 71 All-Star game, and it was at Tiger Stadium in Detroit, then the old Tiger Stadium. For people who remember, it had some really odd dimensions. So it was a hitter's park, to be sure. And the first thing, so when I start watching the broadcast, and first of all, it's called by the great Kurt Gowdy, who was in the 60s and the 70s, he was the NBC, the top guy. He did all the baseball stuff. You've heard his voice, people. Even if you don't know who it is, you know what Kurt Gowdy's voice sounds like.
Highlight reels.
Absolutely. Tony Kubek was his color guy for that one. Of course, a long time NBC. He played for the Yankees, and then he was a long time color commentator in NBC.
I didn't know he was a player.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, he played with Bobby Richardson in the Yankees infield in the 60s. So he was there young. He was very young at that point, but he would spend a good 20 years there. And I just did this randomly. I wasn't trying to figure anything out. But then I saw the lineups, the starting lineups, and it was absolutely remarkable. I was going to say, you got Willie Mays leading off.
Yeah. Eventually, 22 players and managers from the game that would make it to Cooperstown, 17 would win an MVP, and 7 would earn a Cy Young, making this night perhaps the greatest collection of talent ever assembled on one field at one time in the history of baseball.
Amazing.
Joe Torre was there. I was in awe, Torre said. I was leading the league in hitting, but I was still overwhelmed.
Yeah. He batted third, by the way, for the National League that day.
No other All-Star game has featured 20 Hall of Fame players. Period.
No, there can't be.
Let all the names on the field this one night: Rod Carew, Brooks Robinson, Louis Aparicio. One of my papa's favorites. Frank Robinson, Carl Yastrzemski, Reggie Jackson, Al Kaline, Harmon Killebrew, Jim Palmer, Johnny Bench, Willie McCovey, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Willie Stargell, Lou Brock, Ron Santo, Tom Seaver, Steve Carlton, Ferguson Jenkins.
Yeah, he pitched too.
Yeah, Juan Marichal, and our guy Roberto Clemente, who... Mm-hmm. The reason I knew about this game is because it was his last All-Star game. I believe it. It was.
Was he in 72? I can't remember. But
I'm 99% sure it was. And your managers, Earl Weaver from the Orioles and Sparky Anderson from the Reds.
Two of the best ever. Two of the best all-time managers right
even
there.
Even the managers were memorable.
Yeah, exactly.
I loved Sparky Anderson. I remember him, of course, as Detroit Tiger, but I loved him as
was the manager of the Big Red Machine in the 70s. So
the best was when, because the whole game, no expression really too much from Sparky.
Nope.
One thing would go wrong, and he'd lose his mind. One thing would go right, and he'd be so happy.
Yes.
And you'd love seeing happy Sparky Anderson. You loved it.
And then you had Earl Weaver, who was mostly even keel, but some of his umpire arguments were epic.
Yeah.
He was, before Bobby Cox came along, he was the umpire, the manager that was ejected most in Major League Baseball history. Yes. But Earl was great, too. I mean, and off the field, they were just fat. They were funny. They were smart. They were just really great. Just awesome guys.
It was an amazing night. And
it was.
You can actually watch it online, and that is so exciting. I've watched it at least once and a half. I haven't finished both yet twice, but I've watched it once and a
half. Hank Aaron's only All-Star game homer. In fact, his only All-Star game extra base hit.
Whoa.
He had played in like 20-some All-Star games, and all he hit was singles. He did not have a good record in the All-Star game. So he hit his only homer. Clemente hit a homer, and Killebrew hit one. Reggie Jackson hit one that almost left the stadium.
It's probably one of the most famous
home runs of all time. And that's because the wind was – I mean, they hit it like in right center field. If you hit it even remotely, it was gone, man. Mm. The wind just grabbed it and – but still, it's awesome. It's a fabulous watch, and it's surprising how fast it goes.
Yeah.
Considering
how
games are these days. Yeah.
It also, I think, is pretty unique to see not only just one last thing on that game.
Yep.
The talent on that field we just talked about and everything, but the age differences. And the old with the new, which is so weird to say at this point in time and everything, I understand. But with the young guys like Reggie in there, with Harmon Killebrew, and guys, I don't think that we think of these guys in the same eras often.
We don't. This is one of the great things about this game, and this is the last thing I'll talk about. Otherwise, I'll just keep going.
Same.
Willie Mays was 40 years old when he started this All-Star game. In the first inning, the pitcher he faced was Vita Blue, who was 21 years old.
Wow.
Willie Mays was his favorite player growing up. Because they were in different leagues, they never faced each other until that moment.
God, I love this sport. I really do. That's so darn cool.
That's great.
That is awesome.
It's just fascinating. I didn't know about how many Hall of Famers were in there. And then I like, now I think about it. You bet.
I will send you that article.
It's such a great read.
It's such a great read. Seth and James here with you. We go from that All-Star game to talking about two other ones. I did want to mention that as we are gearing up for the All-Star game at Winterfield, or not at Winterfield, but for the Northwoods League, that is coming up on the 22nd. Keep that in mind, everybody, as we've got after baseball leading right up to there, and of course after. And we go from that one to the current All-Star game, where what we've been talking about, really the main headline from the All-Star game, the All-Star voting, I would say, is certainly the snubs. We talked a little bit about that.
Right.
But it's who's going to start for these teams, and it looks like Paul Skenes got the nod.
He did get the nod, and I can almost guarantee it was his pitching performance yesterday.
Yeah.
That did it. He no-hit the Brewers for 7 innings. He struck out 11. I mean, this kid is amazing.
Yeah,
he is something else.
I immediately told Seth to destroy the parts of last week's show where I said he wasn't Fernando Valenzuela.
He might be by the end of the season.
He might be.
He might be the Paul Skeen show. Yeah. Yeah.
And just to that point, he becomes just the fifth rookie pitcher to start the All-Star game, the first in nearly 30 years. He joined Hideo Nomo in 95 and Fernando Valenzuela in 1981.
Yeah.
Mark Friedrich in 76 and David Steinhaus in 62.
Oh, the bird. I forgot about Mark Friedrich. Oh, yes.
Congratulations to him.
Yes.
And very well deserved.
No one cares who's starting the American League for the American League. No one cares.
It's really crazy. I'm looking it up and I can't find out.
Who is
Nobody
it?
Knows. Nobody knows. So we're going to get what we want here. We're going to get Judd and him, Judge and him.
Oh,
we're
the first inning, hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah. That should be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Honestly, the more I thought about it afterwards, I was also mad at myself at, you know, part of the, I didn't know going into the All-Star game that this and this was going to happen last year or the year before or anything like that. I was trying so hard to manufacture something that has to happen organically or it doesn't mean as much. And actually, I want to send a shout out the World Baseball Classic because seeing Ohtani and Trout face off in that was must-see television.
One of the greatest moments
ever.
It
was amazing, and that was organic. You couldn't have planned that to happen. There's certain things, obviously, you plan out in baseball that a good manager will do and everything. But there's also just, hey, it fell out this way.
Yep.
So-and-so got out in the fourth inning that led to this, you know, you being up at this point, and here we are. It's almost not as much fun that way. And I was trying to take that part of the game. I was trying so hard to give everybody what they wanted. Okay, we'll let Chris Sale start, and we'll have Paul Skeens come in, and then end of the ninth, so it's almost like he's starting. You know, it was too much. It's like a lot of things in sports, I think, nowadays. You know what? Just let it breathe. Hmm. Just let it breathe. I think part of what frustrates me with the NFL is the rule changes is why don't you give the players and the referees a chance to get used to what a catch is before you change it again?
Right.
And let
That's
the
good point.
And I don't know, maybe the fans, the whole reason you guys are able to do this for you're able to play a kid's game for thousands of dollars.
Because they're shelling out the bucks. In order to watch you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not doing this.
Man, we have not talked nearly enough about the antitrust suit that the NFL is going to have to eat and how they are just sitting there. Well, I don't agree with this. Well, of course you don't. Well, that is shocking, Paul. That is shocking, Mr. Goodell. You don't agree with this? Wow.
I'm telling you.
When I first got a good paycheck, I did a couple of things, and I made sure that certain things were taken care of as far as bills and all that.
Sure.
But I did look at the Sunday ticket. I love the Red Zone. Mm-hmm. I love all of that stuff. So I'm like, oh, let me look at this. Oh, no, my last name is not Gates. My last name is not Jobs.
Oh.
I can't afford that.
No.
Please tell me who can afford that. I'm being very genuine right now. There's no joking going on right now. How can anybody out there that is not a business, like a business I could see making the investment, especially if you're a bar with more than two
bring
TVs.
People in, right, yeah.
Absolutely. Then more power to you.
Yep.
I think it's actually a very smart investment. And you can make your money back pretty easy and stuff.
You'd think, yeah.
But if it is just you, how does any one person out there, please call up if you actually have the NFL Sunday ticket, 715-424-2600, and how you're able to afford that.
Right.
I'm being very genuine right now because I make a good paycheck, and I look at that and I'm like, no way, man. I'll catch the highlights.
Yeah,
catch the highlights.
Well, and I think Kevin was, but we talked about this with Kevin like a couple weeks ago about the whole football thing because so many people are hooked. Seriously, they are willing to shell out that kind of money. And I'm like, can you even get the value?
Well,
you can't watch all the games at the same time. I mean, yeah, you can flip between, you know, things, but are you getting the value? I mean, the Red Zone is cool. Baseball is doing something similar now, big inning, which I like because I like to see all different kinds of game at the same time. But they don't charge what the NFL does, not even close. No. So, yeah.
Well, and then it comes out that the NFL could have done this cheaper with ESPN. Like ESPN was like, we'll charge $70. We're going to charge $70 for it. And the NFL was like, no, we want to go with the guys that are charging $300.
Yeah.
So on a principle matter, and especially with NFL fans, because while baseball fans and hockey fans have their traditions, basketball fans have some, football fans have one strong tradition of we'll black out our own team. Yes. You know, we'll be fine with that. We will stand on these things or some. It's part of what I marveled at when the NFL became the big dog. Like, wow, they did this with a fan base that could be kind of like, you know, begrudging with their loyalties. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to, and I mean loyalties to the NFL, not to their teams.
Right. I know what you mean.
And yet they became the big dog. Well, that's pretty cool. And then it became, oh, it's not just them. It's not just the core NFL fans like a lot of us have been for our whole lives.
Right.
It's the people that are jumping on now.
Right.
And that fan base is what's keying up a lot of this. Mm-hmm. Not all of it, but a lot
of it. No. And you're so right. And you know, I remember, man, watching football games back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And you'd hear, because they had the blackout policy back then where if they didn't sell out the game, the local market couldn't watch the game on TV.
Yeah.
And you'd have like businesses buying up blocks of tickets so they could show it.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that these days? That's never a problem anymore.
No.
Like every game is sold out at like every, I mean, Jacksonville.
Right, I mean, right.
Maybe not Carolina this year, but you know what I mean.
No,
you know?
Rightfully so.
Yeah, exactly.
Carolina, I feel so bad about this. They are the only team, one of the only teams in sports that I root for, root against, I mean, because of their owner. I don't do that really. Like I did it with the Clippers. I did do it with the Clippers
right.
because obviously he was a different type of animal. He was evil. He was dark.
He was yeah, messed up. Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Shout out to Ed O'Neill earning an Emmy playing him. Daytime, you know, because he's done a kill it on that show.
Oh man, it's a rough role to play. Though.
Rough role, oof. But as Ed O'Neill apparently has been killing it, and the little bit I've seen,
yeah, well, good for him.
But when it comes to David, no, man, that guy's wrong. That guy's wrong for the NFL. He's wrong for owners.
There's something wrong with that guy.
Certain people should not get to have the privilege of owning a team, no matter how much money you offer. And I know that's ridiculous. That's not business. That's not American. You should have some class as other owners. And look what I'm talking about, though. This is the ownership group that includes Jerry Jones. I'll stop.
Class?
I'll stop.
Oh, my God. Dude, what do you think? Right, this is the 60s? Yeah, what's wrong with that? Then I would say most of them at least had something.
That,
you know, they weren't terrible. I mean, they weren't the best either, but not like today.
Oh, man. I just really saw where I was going with that. I'm like,
The world get run by mediocre billionaires? Seriously.
Yes.
When did that happen?
And how did these people that got these millions get there? Because half the decision, as soon as they get a team, they're idiots.
They lose their minds.
They're complete idiots.
Yeah.
They all do the same thing.
Yeah.
They trade half of their draft picks for a big name. And not just in basketball or football, but in all sports they do this.
Yes.
They get the team and like, woo, let's go ahead and sell all the traffic.
Come on, Steve Cohen. What's going on with the Mets? Come on.
And name me one time it has worked. One time. Never has it worked.
I can't even think of it, man.
There's none time that it works. And they keep doing the same thing, these billionaires.
They can't learn. They're like Hollywood. They never learn.
Every one of these guys became a billionaire and watched Brewster's Millions and like just immediately.
That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. Right, I'm going to get rid of all this money.
I didn't watch like how the movie really wraps up or anything. They just watched like the core, or watched a Cliff Notes version of the movie.
Yeah, right. They don't see it.
Before we go to break and we get to our celebration of Mo Hill, I got a couple stats of the show for you, everybody.
Nice.
First up, one that I want to thank Dan Patrick for. He was interviewing Greg Maddux a while back. And in the interview, it came up a couple of interesting – I really watched it just because I saw that Greg Maddux said the most pure hitter he ever faced. He's like, oh, I got to find this out.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Gwynn. Not surprised.
Wow, what a shocker.
Yeah. What he said,
it's true, though.
What he did say, though, what I thought was really cool about that in pure Greg Maddux fashion is Tony Gwynn, most pure hitter I ever faced, he never swung at a ball that he didn't hit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I didn't think about that. You know, not wasting your swing.
Yep.
Like, sure, you would get him on a called strike or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But he wasn't going to waste that swing. And I hadn't thought much about that. And I thought that was kind of unique to Tony and unique to hitters in general in that. That was kind of a cool thought, I thought.
All you need to do is go to his baseball reference page and see how many times he struck out.
Yeah.
It was hardly – I mean, the man was – I mean, and I'm not saying that he was like – he had the talent, of course. He had the eye and everything. But do you know how hard that man worked?
Yeah.
Every single day on his hitting, there was no – just like Ted Williams, there's no accident why he was so good.
Yeah.
He worked hard at it.
It's amazing to think of these guys that were a pitcher of Greg Maddux's, who was arguably one of the greatest – not arguably, one of the greatest mind pitchers of all time.
Probably one of the smartest of all time.
Yeah.
He was brilliant on the mound.
He was afraid of facing Tony Gwynn. He couldn't figure him out. He said – what he said about Tony Gwynn was, it wasn't about getting him out. It was about getting him the single. Let's just get him to single. That's it. It's the equivalent of I'm facing Michael Jordan. Let's let him have 40 or 50. Let's shut down Scottie. Let's shut down Bill Cartwright. Like, it's kind of that. Because he said, because I was worried about, I get Tony on base, and I got to worry about Ken Caminiti coming up. And,
yeah,
right. You know, he's talking about it there. It was a great interview. It was a really great conversation. Yeah. But in that interview came up not only that Greg Maddux, of course, is a World Series winner and a Hall of Famer, but Greg Maddux went 11 for 14 on stolen bases in his career.
Really?
And Maddux was the oldest MLB pitcher to ever steal a base.
Which is hilarious. If you've ever watched Greg Maddux run, he was not fast at all. He was slower and slow, but man, there's this great thing where he came into home plate and he did this move on the catcher. And it's one of the greatest moves I've ever seen. And he was a pitcher that did this. He didn't even slide. Jump back kind of thing, and then he did a little tiptoe around, and it's an amazing – look it up, man. It's so cool.
I've watched it in part because how much I love the stolen base. And it's on a highlight – where I saw it, at least, it's on a highlight reel of greatest stolen bases. And he's on there. He's the only pitcher on there.
Of course.
I thought that was kind of an interesting stat and kind of cool. But what my main stat of the show is going to be one of the only times this season, I believe, on White Sox.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Michael Kopech. Michael Kopech, who has had a lot of hype in the farm system and building up, if you've been paying it, if you're a White Sox fan. So to all four of you out there, thank you for keeping with the team. Thank you.
There's still some that are hanging on.
It's not as lonely for me with the rest of you, all three of you, because we went down a number as I said that. Yeah.
No.
But with him, he pitched an immaculate inning on July 10th.
He did.
Where, of course, for those that don't know, three strikeouts on nine pitches, the top of the ninth inning. The first immaculate inning of the season, so there's your some stats to that. But Kopech became the first White Sox pitcher to throw an immaculate inning in more than a century.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
I was very taken. Now, that surprised me.
Very surprising.
Are you telling me Mark didn't do this? You know, Burley or Jack Black or Blackjack or some of these guys?
I'm trying to think if they had some... Really, Garcia I'm blanking on all the White Sox.
They haven't had a ton of great pitchers.
No.
It's not too shocking, but it was a little surprising. Mm-hmm. Just again for somebody to pay so much close attention to it. I don't expect a lot of people that you're not a whole ton of Sox fans out there.
Right.
But he's the last pitcher to do this for the White Sox. Sloppy Thurston.
Sloppy Thurston.
Yes, Sloppy Thurston.
Oh, what a great nickname,
Hollis. Hollis Sloppy by any other name, Thurston. Yes. Yes.
Oh, where have the nicknames gone? That is a gorgeous nickname.
Wonderful pitcher. He did this back in the day. Born in 1899, passed away in 1973, Sloppy did. I could not find the immaculate inning. I looked for it.
Oh, that's okay. They didn't have the records back then. But, hey, Sloppy Thurston, here's to you, man.
Nice career.
It's a good thing you did do that Michael Kopech stack for the White Sox, because he's not going to be there much longer.
No.
In fact, a lot of players won't be there much longer.
No.
The end of July.
It's one of these things where, part of the reason why I hate my team being bad, it's because even in a bad season, it used to feel like, well, these are guys we can build on.
Bring up the guys.
Yeah, these are guys that we'll see.
Yep.
Now, I do think you're not going to see them getting rid of Sosa. He's young talent.
Probably not.
I think that he'll stay. So there's somebody that I can look forward to next year and until they do probably trade him then. But some of these guys like Crockett and Fetty.
Yeah, Crochet and Fetty.
Crochet.
Oh, that's going to be a tough one. Fetty, maybe.
Fetty's a bit of a journeyman and it won't hurt as much, but I've been enjoying him this season.
Yeah, he's been very good.
Crockett's going to go.
Yeah.
So Oh,
he's been having such a great season, and you can get a haul for him if you trade with the right thing. Yeah.
This is the thing I can only hang on to because I don't want to see these guys go, but they're going to go, and they probably should.
Yeah.
The White Sox ain't winning nothing, let alone
not this year, not next year.
No. So get as much as you. But what I'm worried about is the same guys that have destroyed this team that just three seasons ago.
We're in the playoffs.
We're in the playoffs, and we had a lot of hope for.
Yep.
And a lot of fan bases would have loved to have some of our talent, and now they do.
And that is how it works. The hard one, and I think for a lot of White Sox fans, it's going to be Robert, because I'm almost guarantee he's going to go somewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he's a valuable commodity. He's got like some time left before he becomes a free agent. So, but again, if they play their cards right, they could get some real prospects, some real talent.
That's the only hope I can have with this, is that they actually do a good job with these trades and get a haul on each one of these guys. And to me, here's another thing that I don't like the teams doing. You see the Marlins do this a lot. Mm. And I like the Marlins, so I don't like seeing this happen. They're the only Florida team I like, to be honest with you. I do like the Marlins. When it comes to, okay, we're going to sell, we're sellers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sell one guy. No. I want everything sold.
Yeah.
Get rid of
just
everything.
Just do it.
And get all the picks you can and all the prospects you can. And if you're going to start over, start over. Yeah. Don't put your toe in the water. Dive bomb it and cannonball into that water and trade it all. Get rid of it all.
It's going to be interesting to see where Jazz Chisholm ends up, because I can almost guarantee he's going to be gone too.
That's huge. So, I think he's going to be in a Philly uniform. They are in need of a center fielder. That's one of their few weaknesses.
Yeah.
I see that happening.
I see Philly.
Or Lewis Robertson going there.
Yeah.
Philly's going to get one of them.
Or Atlanta's the other one, because they need outfielders. But
we'll see.
We'll do the trade show closer to the trading deadline.
That'll be coming up, everybody.
Yep.
Right now, we'll get to our commercial break, take care of our partners. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about Mo Hill. We're going to do our celebration of Mo Hill. Pam will join us, and hopefully a lot of you will. 715-424-2600. Call up and join the conversation. Playmakers, proudly brought to you by Quality Post Printing, getting your words out here in Rapids. Welcome back, everybody, to WFHR's Playmakers. Hope you all are having a great afternoon out there. Thank you so much for joining us. Got your host, James, here. We are joined by Seth Havhager.
Good afternoon.
And Pam Hilke.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, Pam.
Nice.
Thanks a lot for joining us, Pam.
My pleasure.
I really do appreciate it. We want to send a big thank you to Quality Post Printing, getting your words out here in Wisconsin Rapids. Big thank you to them for sponsoring the hour. We appreciate that. We are looking forward to a great night tonight at Winterfield. At 6:20, our pregame will kick off as the Rafters take on Lakeshore. But one of the bigger headlines from this game is, of course, the Rafters celebrating Mo Hill, Northwoods League great. Mo Hill's number 24 is going to be retired at Winterfield tonight. And real quick, Mo Hill, one of the most celebrated and greatest players that ever hit the Northwoods League, period. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk with you both about him and celebrate him a little bit. And Pam, you got to see Mo play.
Yes, I did. Hmm. Yes, when I was a youngster growing up. it was a big thing to get to the Twins games, and, you know, we did that.
It was a family,
right? You know, my parents and I, and sometimes my other friends, you know, we go to the Twins games.
Awesome.
I was wondering, how big it was, how much of a, in town we know when a Rafter game is going on, even if we're not paying attention necessarily or something.
Right.
Like, you're going to see a more traffic near Winterfield. There's certain things. There's just a pull to it and everything. When the Twins were in town and they were playing, that was a bit of, we got to get to the ballpark. There was a lot. They did well with that.
Yeah, it seemed to be. Especially on the promotion nights. Like, okay, there was Consolidated Paper Night.
Yeah.
There was NEPCO paper night, the Tavern League night, Labor night, or whatever. And those were generally evenings where the companies gave away tickets, free tickets to their employees.
Yeah.
And then our neighbors worked at those places, so they'd have tickets to hand out to their neighbors like us. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, so we'd get the comp tickets and get to the ballpark.
Yeah.
And I remember also WFHR would have its own special evenings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd give away tickets for 2-3 weeks before, for people to get in, free admission, get your tickets at the station or, get them at the gate.
I couldn't find out if either of you were able to or not. Were the games aired on any radio stations or like at WFHR or anything like that?
Yeah, right. I was looking in the brochure that Pam had, yes. And there's a 1978. This mm-hmm. was before the season. Right. They released this stuff. And it says, yep, right on WFHR, and a nice big old 70s picture of Terry Steak.
Oh, is that awesome?
Yeah, there it is,
oh,
right there.
There it is. Oh, there's that handsome devil. There is that picture. Oh, man, that's handsome great. Man.
Terry Steak and Tom
Look
Metcalf.
At that mustache. That's a stash right there. God, right. He looks good.
And, oh, my gosh. They put WFHR 132. They forgot the zero.
Oh.
Well, hey, there it happens. The old
school. I had never seen
not
it that
many
way
AM
before.
Frequencies at 132.
No.
I've tried.
Hopefully, they're able to find us.
I'm sure.
Well, Tom Metcalf.
Yeah.
I don't. Did you know that he was a former big league pitcher?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. I'm almost positive he was. Yes.
I know for the Yankees.
Yeah. That's right. Yep.
But
yep.
I believe he was a pitcher. Well,
Pam got
somebody
us on that
else
one,
out there
can
yeah.
set
nice.
Us straight.
You got that, Pam. That's your points on that one. Yeah, right. You're right. And speaking of, so Pam was nice enough to hunt down this flyer or this pamphlet that you found from mm-hmm. From when you attended a game or Carl did? Or?
Right. No, that would have been, I don't know. I don't know how I
well,
got
either
this.
Way.
But
either way,
been
you found
me,
it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't know Carl in 1978.
Yeah, oh, sure. That's right. Oh,
yeah. It makes sense.
Someone went to a game.
Yeah, somebody
my timeline
went to a game.
Was all messed up.
Yeah, I had the brochure here, but yeah,
the brochure is awesome. It's really cool. There were some things that were really fun about this. The advertisements that were in there we were talking about were a lot of fun.
All the
too.
Local businesses. Yeah, it's great.
Right.
Hmm. So cool.
Also, it talked about the press box here in 1978. The press box has been rewired and remodeled to accommodate the broadcast crew from WFHR Radio.
Yeah, that's
as
awesome.
Well as any other crews broadcasting to other cities in the Midwest League.
Mm-hmm.
It really speaks to our history, not only right. in this community, but at Winter Field.
Yep.
And how long we've been broadcasting from there.
Right.
That's really unique and really cool.
But I do remember, Mulhill, you know, playing. He was, mm-hmm. he was kind of a fan favorite. Mm. And it always seems like whenever he was at the plate, we wanted him to hit home run, you know?
Yeah.
Well, he hit a lot of them.
Hit the home run, right.
I looked at his stats.
Yeah, one of the leaders, right?
Yeah. Led the league, what was that you said, Seth, four times?
Four times in a row. He led the league, the Midwest League, in home runs. And, I mean, which is, if a guy's hitting like that, usually he's moving up to the next level. The Minnesota Twins were an A-ball team, you know, for the Twins, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think about that. And I was reading a little bit of the history of it, and there might have been some racism involved with that, too. I was telling James earlier today that at the time, the Twins owner was Calvin Griffith, the guy who moved it from Washington, D.C. to Minnesota.
Yeah.
And he was known, especially it's come out recently, some of the old players have talked about it. He was pretty darn racist. He treated his players of color very poorly. One of the reasons Rod Crew left the Twins to go to the Angels was because of Calvin Griffith. A lot of people left because of what he did. He sold the team in 82, so his family is no longer part of that, but I wouldn't be surprised to find out if that had something to do with it.
I will add, piggybacking on that, George Brophy, who was the Midwest League scout, mm-hmm. was the guy, kind of the gatekeeper in this.
Oh.
So if it wasn't the owner, it was him
right.
that was definitely keeping Mo from this. Now, there is talk of Mo had trouble with a breaking ball. Like every AAA and AA hitter I've ever heard of in my life.
That doesn't make it to the bigs, right?
Yeah. There's certainly, you know, little bit of room on both sides here, but it is overwhelming evidence to me on the races
right.
in front. And it's not because I'm looking for that. It's because I don't want to actually.
Right.
I didn't want it to be that.
Right.
But I think what's more important to me is how Mo takes this and mm-hmm. how Mo took this. And that were granted at the time or how he feels now about it seems very similar, but there were racial tendencies to this.
Mm-hmm.
And when that's going on, you could see a lot of players or a lot of people handle themselves differently in the way they treat a community or the way they treat their situation or the way they even treat the game. You You couldn't tell from the way Mo did this. Mm-mm. Not the way he played the game, not the way he treated this community, not the way that he treated the fans. And where they went low, he went high. Very similar to some of his idols, like Jackie Robinson and some other great players.
Right, Hank Aaron.
Hank Aaron, Hank Aaron is one of those guys I was going to say. And I will say, Mo did break a color barrier in North Carolina, where he's originally from.
Wow.
He was the first African-American player in their league out there. So that was noteworthy, and it was something that he would have, you know, would have loved to have been able to do for another team or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to. I'm glad we got to that and got that as part of his story.
Right.
I didn't want to. I didn't want to end on that note.
No,
but
not
I did
at all.
Want. I did want that brought up because that is part of the reason why the Raptors are doing this.
Yes.
Not just because he been a great player and made it to the majors and done whatever he did, mm-hmm. this would still be happening.
Right.
But it's in part because of making things right is a big part of what's being trying to be done right now.
Right. Exactly. And it's pretty obvious that he is a very beloved person in this area.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people remember Mo Hill. And I was, doing the research I did today, it wasn't just him. People knew who he was. In fact, in 1999, the magazine Baseball America voted him the greatest Midwest player of all time.
It's incredible.
Midwest League player of all time. And there was a lot of great players that came through the Midwest League. I was just
That's
looking
really
at the stats
impressive.
on the brochure Pam had, and I saw a name that was Dave Stewart. Well, is that the Dave Stewart, Oakland A's pitcher who won 20 games every year? Why, sure enough, it was. Which is really cool. He had a great year that year, too, in 1977.
Yeah, you were telling me those stats.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty darn cool to think Dave Stewart played in this town, played in this area, and everything.
Pitched against Bo Hill,
And, boy, that would have been – because Dave Stewart had one of the more intimidating stare downs in baseball.
That would
have been pretty cool to see at a young age, see how that developed and everything. There are some great stats. There are some great parts of this, too. Pam, did you have anything that stood out to you, either about watching Mo or about from the brochure here or the stats that you saw?
No,
I just wanted to make sure to give you a chance if you
did.
No,
and, he was noted because of he was of color.
Yeah,
as opposed to many of the other players on the team.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So,
well, I imagine even in this area at the time,
residence-wise,
there wasn't a whole lot
even
of ethnic people and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
One of the things that I did want to note, we want the audience, if you watched Mr. Hill play, if you would like to call and talk about him, please feel free to 715-424-2600. We'll be talking about him right till the end of the show. We got until top of the hour, so we'd love to hear from you. 715-424-2600. Listening on the Civic Media app, you are just a touch or two away, and thank you for downloading the app. One other kind of cool note I thought that you guys might like before we do go to break, I did want to mention, Mo Hill had a couple of things that he was really known for, obviously with his hitting. He had some real style to his at-bat, some of those things, and his iconic toothpick.
Oh, okay.
Further cementing Hill's iconic status within the league was his predilection, his love of toothpicks.
Yes.
Of all
predilection, I think is the word.
Predilection,
for,
thank you. Quote, I remember that later on, UL Washington became known for always playing with a toothpick in his mouth, but UL had nothing on Mo Hill. One time, Mo got hit in the head by a pitch and went down. We ran out the dugout to go check on him and rolled him on his back, and someone tried to take the toothpick out of his mouth, and Mo said, don't touch it.
Oh. Oh my gosh.
So I think a great line, but also he kept it in his mouth after he got hit by a pitch.
In the head,
he got hit in the head and still kept the toothpick in his mouth.
You could get injured, could have stabbed
my goodness. I can think of the amount of things that would happen.
The first thing that popped was UL Washington, because he's like the only player I can think of that made it to the major. And they were talking about it's a playoff game because he played for the Royals. And he's like, kids, don't do this. Don't put a toothpick in your mouth. It's just my thing, okay? Just don't. It's not. Please don't do it.
In 2010, Hill was inducted into the Gaston County Sports Hall of Fame because of his athletic exploits.
Mm-hmm.
1964, graduate of Old High School, Highland High School, Hill became a top professional baseball prospect last year before the Major League Draft began in 1965. Some other notes of his career that I thought were cool.
He just missed it. It would have been interesting to see what would have happened if he would have been in the draft.
And just a very a wonderful human being, too, mm-hmm. by all rights and everything that he was able to do from this area. I am sure he's in town. We welcome him to Rapids, mm-hmm. Back to Rapids, yes. I should say, mm-hmm. and wishing him a great, fun night. Looks like the weather's going to cooperate, and I'm feeling a win tonight, so I think that'll going to be fun,
that'd
too.
That'd be great.
We're looking forward to seeing how this one plays out in just less than an hour from now, everybody. Mm-hmm. 6:20, our pregame will kick off. Andy will be taking over the airwaves here, and our Rafters, their boys of summer, will be on the air as they take on Lakeshore. Get to Witterfield if you can. If you can't, well, maybe we can help you out. Maybe we can give you some tickets, huh? Maybe I think that's a fun way to celebrate Mr. Hill as well.
All right.
Because not only do I have 5 Rafter tickets here, but I have 5 meal vouchers with
Yum.
Them to go along with them and everything.
Free food, bud.
If
Free
you
food.
Would like to play along, go ahead and give us a call and be the first caller at 715-424-2600, 424-2600. Extra points if you got to see Mr. Hill play. But
nice.
We'll give these tickets away. Pam, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
That was a lot of fun.
Yes.
Yeah. You did too good. You're going to come back. You're going to have a segment just for you coming up. Right? That's
okay.
what we'll do.
My point of view.
Yes.
Pam remembers.
Pam's point.
Pam remembers. That's what's going to be.
I was kidding, but now I think we actually are onto something. I think we might have something. Thank you, Pam. We appreciate you.
Oh, you're welcome.
We will take a quick time out, our final one of the show. We'll come back and we'll have some more fun right here on Playmakers, brought to you by our good friends over at Quality Post Printing, getting your words out here in Wisconsin Rapids. Welcome back, everybody, to WFHR's Playmakers. Seth and James hanging out with you to the top of the hour. Let's go. Got a good 10 minutes left. We're going to make sure to have some fun while we got you.
Yeah.
Feel free to call up and join the conversation, 715-424-2600. Love to hear from you, everybody, especially if you were had a chance to see Mr. Hill play.
Yeah.
We would love to. Is this messing with you, bro?
No, I'm good.
The microphone?
No, I'm good.
The
it's all good.
Sorry about that.
No, it's good.
I was trying to do 2 different ones.
No, that's fine.
So we've got a little bit of time here. We'd love to talk about whatever you want to talk about sports-wise, everybody, 715-424-2600. Anything that's going on with you, what you think is interesting, I think is fun to talk.
I got, going through all the stuff I was going through that I didn't know about the Midwest League and the where it was when Rapids had a team and stuff. So I didn't realize they were here for 20 years, 63-83. Do you know who their last manager was? Charlie Manuel.
Whoa.
Future manager of the Cleveland Indians and won a World Series managing the Philadelphia Phillies back in 2008.
Yeah, I remember that.
Charlie Manuel was, and he was, if I remember, he came up with the Twins too when he was a player, if I remember correctly. So, yeah.
That 08 Philly team was crazy.
Jimmy Rollins.
They had some personality.
Ryan Howard.
Man, you remember
Cole Hamels?
At that time, Jimmy Rollins and Ryan Howard were 2 guys that I thought, well, we'll talk about these guys for the next 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's so weird to think of those guys that just like they're in the ether and like, oh, I remember him. Like
yeah.
He was huge at that time.
Jimmy Rollins is borderline. Hall of Fame, him and Utley, Chase Utley.
What
a double play combo, by the way.
Oh, man, those teams. nice teams.
Yeah.
Very nice teams. So I do have this one that we can touch on, Seth.
Okay.
Why exactly do baseball managers wear uniforms in the dugout?
See, now that was not always the case. You can go back and look at old pictures. They wore suits and stuff like that. I can't remember who the last manager who was, but tell us, James, why do they wear uniforms now?
Because, by and large, they have to. I mean, it's the rules of the game.
Right.
Of course they have. No. So baseball managers are the only managers that actually do go out in the field to play when the game is actually going on.
They're the only ones allowed to, I believe.
Allowed to,
yeah,
yes.
That's right. Yeah.
Basketball, football, hockey, all of these other sports.
Stay on the sidelines.
They are on the sidelines through the whole game, and that is the rule. In fact, they are punished if they come onto the field oftentimes. Where in baseball, a manager, it's nothing to see a manager walk out to the dugout. Walk out to the
mound.
To the mound. And in fact, I started thinking more because I just wanted to have something as kind of like some fun to wrap up a show one day with.
Right.
And I did have a listener ask, hey, I don't understand why this happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of got the answer there pretty quickly for that. But it did get me thinking about it and how with all the changes to baseball and all the different things that I and a lot of fans kind of feel like, well, we should probably stop doing this. We don't need to do this anymore. Or, oh, this is kind of, it's past its time. We need to evolve the sport.
Right.
I'm so happy happy this still exists. And I'm so happy this is still a part of baseball. And that I can't think of necessarily a reason or a way even that they would ever get rid of it. I think that we're always going to have the manager walk into the mound and that patience. We want so much in life right now, not just our sports, but our meals, our gas, our entertainment, everything. Fast, fast, fast. Mm-hmm. And I don't just want to fast. I want it in a condensed amount of time with no commercials, and I don't want any pause or just give it to me now.
Yeah. Instant gratification, right.
Most of our favorite moments in sports involve time and patience. Waiting for your team to get to out of the snap and walk up to the line and get there, and they got 25 seconds to do it. Mm-hmm. And in that 25 seconds, there's no action going on. The game is not being played, but it is so exciting. It's the fourth quarter. This is the last play of the game.
Right.
They score a touchdown. They win. All of it is building to that. Look at the defense. This guy's moving over here now, and all that's happening. It's exciting, and nothing. And the ball is not in play.
Right.
Basketball. The kid's bringing it down the court, and you know that they've got to make this shot because he's only got 10 seconds, and he's just dribbling.
Waiting for that last possible second, right, to shoot the ball.
There are, I understand, and I'm not begrudging of us evolving with sports, but I love that there are still some moments of, Collins is going out to the mound. He's taking him out, or he's going to talk to the pitcher. Maybe he's taking him out.
Right.
I see that the manager's in the dugout on the phone. Looks like he's going to pull
up his reliever. Call someone in the bullpen, right? Yep.
I love these parts of sports, man. And I'm so glad that they still exist. Right.
Think of them here. And I love that. I never thought about that. But here's a great example of that. Think of the moment right before Dennis Eckersley threw the ball to Kirk Gibson.
Oh, yes. Perfect example.
You know, right? He's holding the ball and everyone's still. It's like for a second, everything is completely still. And then he throws the ball, and there's that split second where the ball is traveling to the home plate. You don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. And then all of a sudden he hits the ball. And, oh, my gosh, it's gone. It's a home run. Oh, my gosh, losing my mind. Everyone is going crazy. And it's all because of the anticipation, you know, of can he do it? Can he not? Can he run? What will happen if he hits the ball on the ground? You know, something like that. Every moment like this has something like that to build it up to that. And that's why I think those are the ones we remember the most. You know, like the quarterback waiting to the last possible second to throw the touchdown. You know, he's going to get creamed, but he's going to wait because he needs to wait, and he just throw. Yeah, that kind of stuff, you know.
You saying that, I immediately thought of 100 different times that happened to a quarterback I liked, and they hung onto the ball just for that extra second, took the massive hit and got the ball that got the touchdown or the first down or whatever it was. I don't think we take enough pleasure in that in sports and take enough time to appreciate the pleasure in that in sports. As much as we want our scores and our highlights, there is something to be said for some of that. Now, all that being said, I have been one of the biggest cheerers of baseball's changes. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of the whole extra innings putting a guy on second thing.
Okay.
That one I'm not a huge fan of, but otherwise...
You gave me no time, man. Sorry. I just got to put that... Okay, everyone is saying it wrong. Okay, it's not a ghost runner. We know what a ghost runner is from when we growing up. Mm-hmm. It's an invisible guy on the base, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't have enough people to play, right?
Yeah.
It's the zombie runner, okay? Mm. We need to start calling it the zombie runner. He is literally brought back from the dead because he's the guy that made the last out in the inning before.
That's
and
right.
They put him on second. I hate the zombie, by the way. I hate it. I hate it.
Yeah.
I want
them
to get rid of it.
Yeah.
They won't. But things that it's like, I'm with you. I love most of the changes they've done. Get rid of the zombie runner.
You're
Get
so right.
Rid
brother.
Of the zombie
You're so
runner.
Right. And not only but what we need to be calling it, but getting rid of it. But other than that, I'm a big fan of a lot of the changes they have made because honestly, because I like the results, not because I like the time being shorter. That part never bothered me. The shorter time, cool. I mean, that's good. I think that's good if you can grow your sport. What I think helps grow your sport is excitement. Balls in play.
Yep.
And stolen bases.
Yep.
And we're seeing more and more of that. Everybody likes a home run. They don't want a whole game of home run, strikeout, home run, strikeout.
Walk.
Nobody
home
wants
run,
to see that.
Walk, yeah.
Especially when you're not guaranteed that homer. But you're guaranteed a lot of strikeouts. No matter what baseball game you're watching nowadays.
Strikeouts are boring.
You're going to see strikeouts.
Yeah, and they're boring. I'm sorry. Strikeouts are boring. Unless it's like the last out and the top of the ninth or whatever it is. Strikeouts are boring. We want to see the ball in play. We want to see guys running, okay?
Yeah. Keep in mind, everybody, this will be our last Playmakers until next Friday.
Yeah, that's right.
We have no show on Monday and Wednesday due to the Rafters 5:20 start times.
Yep, that's right.
So we will, we'll, of course, give the airwaves to our Rafters, which we're excited about. Enjoy the boys of summer this weekend, everybody. Rafters, again, kicking off their pregame at 6:20. They'll be at 6:20 tomorrow night's game as well. And then on Sunday, a 3:50 start time, which will interfere with our original programming on Sunday night.
That's right.
We will not be having any new shows for you this Sunday.
Yep, that's right.
But we will have some coming up for you. Be listening for that. And, of course, a great lineup of all of our shows next week, not just here, but on WIRI. Encourage you to hang out for that all week long and enjoy our weekend lineups. And, of course, join us for Over the Back Fence tomorrow. Seth will be
that's
here
right.
for that.
I will be here.
11 to noon. It's your call-in show. Another call-in show where you can call in with your items you're looking for, items you want to sell,
or
and all
you
want
to talk some sports? That's fine.
Yes, please.
So tell me how it goes with Mo Hill tonight. I'd love to hear about that.
Yes, so, yeah. Yes, please. And cheer on Mo if you're going to be at the ballpark, everybody. Again, a big congratulations to you. A big tip of the baseball cap to Mr. Mo Hill. Enjoy
Absolutely.
Your night, sir. You've earned it. Thank you, everybody. Best listeners in radio. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you sooner than later here at...
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.